Did you do some really strong, powerful work to create a strategic plan? And do you find that that plan is now sitting on a shelf gathering dust, or maybe it's in a virtual folder where it hasn't been opened or revised in a long time? Does it feel like you don't have enough time or the resources or the staff to get the information that you need to make the best decisions possible for your district? Well, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Measure Up, the podcast for transformational school leaders. Join host Dr. Nicole Aliotto as she interviews school leaders and explores how to build an evidence-based culture so you get the outcomes you and your school community deserve.
In this week's episode, I interview Ginger Vale, junior high school principal in Saugerties Central School District. She has been in the district as a teacher and administrator for a number of years and shares a recent strategic focus that has made a measurable difference for her students and staff. Enjoy my conversation with Ginger Vale.
Ginger, hello. Welcome to the podcast. So excited to have you here.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here.
Yes, and we are here at Deeper Learning. It's an exciting event and lots going on, but we're going to get right into it. You are at Saugerties. So tell me, what's the best thing about working at Saugerties?
I think the best thing about working at Saugerties is the people that I work with and their courage to take on some new things since... Since 2020, we all had to rethink what we were doing. And I think that in the last, 5 years coming out of that, I have some really courageous educators that are teaming with me to kind of move that needle and focus on the student.
I know we were talking about, before we jumped on and started recording, talked about some of the areas of focus, and you had a few areas and started to narrow it down. So tell me about the three E's, and then how did you narrow it down to your priority for this coming year?
Yeah, so there was a lot, there's a lot of things to the classroom that are easy to do, and then there's a lot of things in the classroom that are a challenge, and just the empowerment, engagement, and equity has been a focus over the last 4 years for our district, but really it's been one of my focuses for the I'm starting my 30th year at Saugerties next year. So, it's always been the kids. I've always treated them as human beings. And it's really important to me that everybody sees each child as an individual. And that's empowerment if a child feels seen. And engagement, that they are actually in tune with what's going on. We've done some walkthroughs this year. We started the classroom walkthroughs. And what was given back to me from data, just in looking at our students, we have very compliant, sweet, energetic kids, but how do you knock that into the next level, right? Like, so they're doing everything that they're asked to do, but we want them to ask for more. So it's been really a great journey, and we've really been focused as an administrative team to deliver the message that we're here to support, our teachers and our paraprofessionals in the building, and it's been quite a journey.
With your history, I know I've been doing this for a few decades as well,
right.
and the measurements of things is what I do and I love, and when you say data, it just always makes my heart light up. The idea of student choice and voice is part of empowerment and engaging students and giving everyone a chance to participate in their learning and contribute to their passions and direction. When you think about those critical years in the middle level and transitioning from that elementary mindset and getting them prepared for high school, how do you develop that student choice and voice? How do you start to narrow down it and kind of break through the noise that exists with everything happening at the middle level? I guess, where do you start?
So where I started when taking a look at what we could give them choices for, because there's so many lockstep things with the four cores, like the math, the science, the social studies, but you have flexibility with your encores, and with the new push from the state and the CTE education, there's like 1.75 credits of CTE education that we have to provide in New York State, and we are a building that is 712. So I was able to ask the business department of the high school to create an eighth grade elective that's actually ninth grade credit. I asked our family and consumer science if they would invite eighth graders to take the ninth grade elective of food and nutrition, and the technology department developed an emerging technologies course that also gave choice. So instead of you are taking family and consumer science and you are taking technology, we actually do that in seventh grade. We give them a little taste of everything, and then they can choose from those electives in the next. And they can build on that 4+1 like pathway for CTE or for career readiness. So it's offered to all students. It's not like an accelerated track that they're picking these. All students have choice in the encores. So that was one thing that I proposed and that has taken off. And the grades in those classes, like I did take a look at that the first year. We had very, very few students were not, like, I think maybe two students because of attendance or illness or other things were not able to complete the high school requirements as eighth graders. But even our students with disabilities, like, everybody took those high school electives and were successful and have a step forward, you know, in credits, but in interests too.
Right.
So that was very cool. So we've had that for about 4 years now.
And we hear a lot about exposing students and exploring their passions and interests early so that by the time they get to making a choice to take a career technical education program in high school, you know, they at least have an idea, do I want to spend half of my day in this embedded program before they have to make the decision. You know, give them a little, you know, appetizer before they have the full entree, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think like that was in place, and also engagement-wise, sometimes there's massive study halls in your building because there's just, you know, that master schedule is probably a headache for a lot of school leaders and making it fit and ebb and flow and making sure that you're offering what you can offer. And I wanted students not to get lost in the study hall. So we actually, part of our MTSS, the multi-tiered student support mission, we actually created targeted learning labs. So they're a smaller caveat for students that struggle. It can be IEP bound or 504. It can just be that student that just needs a little extra help and they're not lost in a study hall, but they're in these targeted learning labs instead. And the connections that they're building with the educators of those, they're able to, you know, listen and help. So those were like two big driving forces before the, you know, before the launch of what the state is announcing now with the blue ribbon and things like that. But I was very pleased that we were on our way.
Right.
You know, just kind of thinking forward. It was nice to see some things that came out in that, where I was like, okay, we're doing
and seeing the impact that it has on the students. Speaking of impact, we talked before we started recording also about the performance assessments that you're working on and the impact that it had on engagement. Tell me a little bit about the metrics that came out of it. So when it came time for the students to present, I know there was a number of students who presented that maybe some didn't expect. How many would actually go through with it? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think with change comes nervousness in our educators, and there was this group of teachers, one English teacher in particular, she started the portfolio work, and then it kind of caught on with the humanities teachers of our junior high. And they've been working on building portfolios in the humanities. So there was an English portfolio and there was a social studies portfolio. And we were lucky enough to have our eighth grade courageous humanities teachers join forces and say all eighth graders in humanities will have two portfolios to present at the end of the year instead of that written assessment. And when it finally came to the culmination day, those educators were so nervous that some of the kids that were the ones that they had to keep, you know, encouraging and, you know, come on, let's go. You got a slide, one slide, let's go. You know, it was really important. But they were like, they're not going to come to school.
Oh, no.
They're probably just going to sit home. It's done. And I'm like, you know, and we were like, have faith. We're all a little nervous. You know, our superintendents had invited other superintendents from other districts.
So,
you know, you should have seen the faces in the faculty meeting when I announced that. It was like, are you serious, Ginger? What are you doing? And I was like, hey, you know, it's all about growth, and they're going to come and see, and we're doing something no other district is doing.
Yep.
And we wound up with 96% attendance.
Wow.
On those dates, which if I compare it and look back, my AP may have, but I think it probably was the most attended day.
Wow, that's amazing.
You know, so it was very cool. And we actually mixed grade levels, so the 7th graders were able to see the 8th grade presentations, so that was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And just the body of work that went in, the students knew what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So in social studies, they highlighted enduring issues that meant something to them, because the 8th grade curriculum has that civil rights piece,
mm-hmm.
Which is a challenge to teach 8th graders about that. But they were, there was a lot of empowerment going on, like especially the females that I sat in on with suffrage.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were like, I wish I could have just done my portfolio, like on the women's journey.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the first year, so there was almost like a lockstep of what they needed to include.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's been great because the teachers actually said, maybe I'll give them a little more freedom if they really find a passion to go with next year. So it was a really great end of the year. And I have to say that one of the educators of that team is the one that was extremely worried about the reins being loosened and letting students kind of have conversations. And, you know, he's changed his whole attitude about he can be a better teacher if he's moving about through those conversations rather than standing and delivering. So there's been a lot of growth there.
A lot of reflection. So what advice would you give to other principals who are in a similar position, particularly at the middle level, who might have been having these conversations or these ideas and might be a little reluctant or maybe getting some pushback? You know, what would you suggest that they do to get things started in this direction?
I think it's very easy to get caught up in the people that don't wanna do. And I think you have to like focus on their why they don't wanna do. Very early in my teaching career, we were talking about eliminating tracts at our school, and I was the math teacher in 8th grade at the same school. And I remember the school leader saying to me, like, if one person is against us eliminating tracts, we're not going to, and it sat so wrong with me that I kind of carry that little tidbit with me, and I'm like, no. Dr. Rohrbach that I work with, she presented like the school of fish analogy, and sometimes with a whole school of fish, it just takes the front 10 to turn that school around, and I'm carrying that with me too. She brought that to the table when she came to the district, and you have to not get caught in the hesitancy or the negatives, because you have to look at your faculty as a whole. And just like so many things in education can be either, you know, those old transparencies of the day, you can overlay so many of these things that we talk about, you know, the PBIS, the SEL, the and there's always that pyramid where there's like 5% that are going to be the trickiest or the most challenging, whether it's student behavior or making change, and you can't let that 5% drive the 95%. So if you're passionate, like I am, about students having a voice and actually listening to them and giving them a day that they want another day. So if they want to come running back into the building, which is another quote that I've remembered from other, you know, conferences that I've attended, but what do you do to make children want to hop on that bus and want to run through the door?
Yeah.
Like you have, and you know that, like as a leader, believe in yourself and, you know, believe in the kids that you're there for, because that's why we're there. And, you know, everybody will appreciate that. And your teachers, they came to this business for a reason. And sometimes you just have to remind a few of that.
And your evidence to me, going back to the numbers of 96% attendance on a day of presenting, which is for many number one fear, and then presenting in front of strangers as well as your peers. I mean, that's a testament to the work. So
yeah,
that's exciting.
It was very cool. It was about 6 at a time, in like a circle, and there was the faculty. It was just so. It was such a great activity, because teachers that hadn't teachers that hadn't tasked the portfolio, like my science teachers, my math teachers, my teaching assistants that were part of helping students develop those portfolios, they were all facilitators. So they were able to see what a portfolio looks like too. So we were kind of able to, you know, in that school of fish, we were able to drop a few worms, like in the school, we were able to, you know, bait some people to think about it. And in the reflections, the staff reflections after, like we already grabbed the social studies seventh grade, want to do that next year too. So
I know the rollout is going to be more staff into next year. So what do you think the biggest kind of next step is going to be after the implementation of performance assessments in more classrooms?
I do think that the next step, I have to provide space and collaboration time, which with some of the changes that we've made over the last few years, we actually have team time. We've had team time since the dawn of time, but like we've really, the teams are working together. So they, and there's a professional collaboration period as well. And I try to marry teachers of the same discipline in an open period to collaborate. So just making sure that there's space for the professionals to feel validated in their work, but also have time so that they don't feel like they're just having kids throw something up there to call it a presentation for learning. Like, I never want there to be like a checkbox. Like, too many times we fall into that, the have to's. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen like some of what you talk about in your podcast is to make sure that we don't like step on the accelerated pedal too fast, because we'll wind up crashing into the wall. Like, you need to make sure that you're not doing that, and that you're providing space and validity and feedback and time. So I think that, you know, we're gonna carefully smith our faculty meetings for this year to include space for the next wave of teachers that are gonna come, and listen to them about what they want to accomplish, because we have made a change in the faculty meetings as well. There's always a professional development slice instead of just the, you know, the hallways aren't clear enough, or, you know, make sure you shut your windows before you leave the building. I can do that different ways. So we try to talk about students and planning in the faculty meetings. So I think giving them some voice as to what we're tackling for the better of instruction.
Yep.
Not cell phones and discipline. Try not to get in those weeds.
We come around to the circle where we started with about students' compliance and engaging students and having the student voice, and now we're talking about, you know, setting up the systems to ensure that we're not dealing with teacher compliance, ensuring we have the space for teacher voice and teacher and
love
staff
that.
Engagement. So I think that, you know, it's important that it's kind of that yin and yang, and making sure you have that balance in your system. And that, you know, I think in this example, it's great. We see it a lot when we're talking about SEL, social emotional learning, and of students. We want to make sure that we have that for our staff as well. So with this engagement idea, we want to make sure we have that space for both your staff and your students. So I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate
Ginger.
You, and thank you for finishing like that, because you just brought it around for me.
You did it. You did it. It was great. Thanks so much.
Appreciate
have a great conference.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Measure Up. If you found something useful, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating. We would really appreciate it.